Well, we're going to start off with a survey question this morning. They're going to throw the QR code up there. It's not in your notes this morning. So pull your phone out, if you will, open your app. And here's the question I want to ask you, and I'd love to get your feedback. If you had the power to change anything in the world, limitless power to change one thing in the world, what would that be? And I know this is going to be tough, but kind of try and limit it to like a one or two word answer. You can say, you know, end hunger, or so try and get it, because they're going to all come up in kind of a matrix on there, and we want to be able to get through us. So if you had limitless power and you could change one thing in the world, what would it be? So as you can imagine, that question's actually been asked a lot to people, over and over, actually, time and time again. And as you can imagine, depending on what age group, depending on what demographic, depending on what race or ethnicity, depending on what socioeconomic level, depending on what time in history, or depending on what was happening in the world at the time, that answer varied wildly. But here's something, some things that have been answered that maybe you can identify with, and maybe you say, I can certainly understand why people would answer this way. Some people wanted to improve the availability of good jobs, unrestricted access to quality education, even post high school and college level, eradicating hunger and making sure no one faced malnourishment. Others would change the way humans behave towards each other, eliminating bullying and meanness, especially now that so much of that takes place online, preventing the mistreatment of animals, ensuring equality for all people, regardless of their gender, their race, their religion, sexual identity, stopping the exploitation or the abuse of children, putting an end to the hoarding of wealth by the super rich, and still others focused on changes through demanding transparency and integrity and accountability from politicians and government agencies, putting an end to wars and violence across the globe, holding accountable corporations and governments that are responsible for irreparably harming the environment. And as you can imagine, that list goes on and on and on and on. And as you can imagine, depending on who you asked and when you asked and what was happening when they asked, those answers would reflect that. But I want to take a look, if we can, at how you answered the question. Make people love each other, end war, more kindness, end all wars, better education, eradicate, I'm assuming you mean end hate. hate comes up as one of the peace, water access. Racism, end pain, no more hate, world prosperity, that everyone would treat each other with kindness, more love, less war, end homelessness, end poverty, hunger, hate, have a talk with Adam and Eve, okay? Maybe talk them out of disobeying God, I got it. End violence, faith in Jesus, no lies, salvation, no Jesus, the ruining of the atmosphere, sickness, world kindness. So a lot of common themes. You guys answered very similarly, and those are all really good answers. Those are all really fair answers. And what I find most interesting in when that poll is given to people outside of church and inside of church, the answers all are very, very similar. And what I find most interesting is what is not that's not on there, but it's what is not on there. It's I identify and I understand why all those things made it on there. The thing that's missing, though, the thing that when asked, what in the world would you change if you had the power to do it, what never appears on these lists is the one thing we're capable of changing, us. None of us put, I would change me. I'm what needs to change in the world. And that is likely because if we were given the power to change anything, it's far easier for us to believe that what is out there needs to change more than what is in here. It's easy for us to put our focus on all that needs to change around us. The problem with that is we have almost no power to change all the things we want to see change happen in. I wish I could put an end to war. You do realize you and I have very little to say about that other than who we elect. And honestly, when certain things happen, it doesn't matter who we elect, they have to respond in a certain way because governments love to fight wars. And the ultra rich, we can vote and we can have demonstrations and we can do anything we want. And the ultra rich have enough money to ignore us and not care how we feel about any of that. All of the things we want to see changed, all the things we believe need to be changed, all the things we demand need to be changed, we have almost no power to change. And the one single thing we have limitless power to change, we don't add to our list of what we would change. So there's a saying in, it's an old proverb that's so old, Jesus actually quotes it in the book of Luke. So Jesus is teaching and he uses an old proverb. He didn't make this up. He was quoting something that predated him. And in Latin, it's Medice cura te ipsum. And what that means in English is physician, heal yourself, or physician, heal thyself. And you've probably heard that expression before, and here's what it means. If you are capable and you have the power to heal other people, you have the power to call out what needs to be changed in other people, it would be beneficial if you first made sure that you were fixed in all ways so that you had the position, the perspective, the power to then help others with the change they needed in their lives. Let me give you a practical example. Studies report that a substantial number of healthcare workers are either overweight or obese, with figures ranging from 65 to 78%. 65 to 78% of professional healthcare workers are either overweight or obese. Other studies show that around 1 out of 4 licensed practical nurses are cigarette smokers. So these are trained individuals, educated individuals, professionals who are tasked with helping us with our sickness, our disease, and move towards better health. Yet, they're purposely, knowingly, it's not as if they don't know, doing things that are inarguably damaging their own health and likely going to lead to an earlier death. I mean, it's hard to believe that being obese and overeating and eating the wrong things and smoking and doing the things that we know without doubt lead to poorer health. When healthcare professionals are doing that to themselves, it's hard to fully take them seriously, right? Well, I was at the doctor this week. I'm back into this thing where I told you about it. I'm covered in hives and I'm getting these angioedema outbreaks and it's my autoimmune system. And I was meeting with a specialist who's been my specialist for years now. And I haven't seen him though in a couple years because I went through a period where I didn't have any outbreaks. And he came in and I was like, wow, I was shocked at the change in his physical appearance. He had put on probably 45 or 50 pounds since the last time I had seen him. And I'm not saying that we're all not subject to doing things, but these are, and I don't want to pick on just healthcare professionals. More and more law enforcement officers are being called out for behaviors that are not only unethical and immoral, but they're illegal. And it doesn't stop there. There are church leaders, pastors who are being exposed nationally for doing things that not only just a decent human being shouldn't do, but that a spiritual leader should especially not do. So there are many, many places that we see the contrast, the disparity between what needs to change in us and what we expect to change in the world. Every single one of us, there is a gap, a canyon. On one side sits all the things that we believe need changing, that we think should change, that we want to change, that we cry out for change, that we get angry when they don't change. And then on the other side, it's all the things that we actually have the power to change that we do virtually nothing about. And the way to do that, though, The way to make the world better is to make your world better. So collectively, when each one of us is improving the space that we live in, the experiences that we occupy, the people that we impact, when collectively we start living our lives to improve our world, can you understand how that could multiply to mean that the world could change? So grab your notes if you don't already have them out, because we're going to try and overcome three obstacles that'll keep us from changing our mindset to improve our world. The world instantly becomes a better place when I decide that, number one, the most important changes that I will make will be personal changes. Most important changes I will make will be personal changes. And when I mean personal, I mean close to home. I mean starting with us. How many are old enough to remember the former Speaker of the House, Tip O'Neill? Oh, okay. We got some real oldies in. I'm personally too young, but I read it in a history book. I'm kidding. He famously said this: all politics is local. And what he meant by that was that people care about the issues that affect their lives personally. They care about not just their state or their city, even their neighborhood. Truthfully, they care about issues that affect their home, their kids, their paycheck, their jobs, their schools, their personal lives, their health care, their futures. And people want to elect those who will protect and affect positively all those things in their day-to-day lives. So I want you to hear this. The things that matter to you most, the things that will affect your everyday life, are not the things that the media or politicians or anything else is trying to get you to focus on. It's not the corporate tax code. It's not all the billionaires cheating and not paying their fair share. It's not environmental protection laws that won't you let you take your boat, whatever. It's not police reform. It's not even the red 40 dye getting banned in foods. I know we're going to hate to see that Kool-Aid all of a sudden is clear once they take the red dye out or whatever it happens to be. It's not even who sits in the Oval Office that's going to affect your everyday life. I know we want to pretend it is. Because when we get to point our rage and our disappointment and our anger and our energy somewhere, it's easy to do it because we know we don't have to do anything. We don't have to exert any energy. We don't have to make any plans. We don't have to make any sacrifices, because that's never going to change. The changes that will matter in your life are changes that you make in your own life. Listen to what it says in Romans 12:2, and this is in the Message. It says, don't become so well adjusted to your culture that you fit into it without even thinking. Don't act like the world so much that you can't even tell the difference between you and the world. Instead, fix your attention on God, and you'll be changed from the inside out. Readily recognize what He wants from you, and then quickly respond to it. Unlike the culture around you, always dragging you down to its level of immaturity, God brings out the best in you, develops well-formed maturity in you. And then I want to read just part of that from a different translation. Throw up the next. Don't become like the people who belong to this world, but let God completely change the way you think so that you will live differently. Is there anything more personal than what happens here? This is all you. This is all me. What happens here is the essence of who we are. And what happens here, right? If you think it, you'll likely say it. And if you'll say it, you speak into existence the way you will. You are laying out your own roadmap. When you think it and you say it, you begin to follow that. And so it says that we need to change the way, let God change the way we think so that it'll change the way we live. God says, listen, not only do you not need to really focus on what the world's doing, because if you focus on what the world's doing, it will drag you down to its level of immaturity. What you need to do is focus on my purpose in you. I'll change the way you think about the world. I'll change the way you think about politics. I'll change the way you think about money. I'll change the way you think about your family. I'll change the way you think about you and show you the potential you have, show you the power you have to change you so that you can change your world. Number two is this. The world instantly becomes a better place when I decide that my greatest enemy, or the greatest enemy to making changes in my life, is me. So mental health experts say that we resist change for a multitude of reasons. Here are some of those that they state. That we're afraid of the unknown future that comes from changing. We also don't like the idea that change may mean giving up control of certain things in our life. We're afraid that we'll try to change and fail. We would rather stick with the familiar, even if it's not ideal, even if we know it's working against us, over the idea of putting out a lot of energy to make change. And sometimes we simply don't understand the benefits of change, or we don't trust who's calling us to change. That could be a spouse, it could be our family, and usually it's God. Sometimes, more often than we'd like to admit, the big reason we don't want to change is because we simply don't want to change. We don't think we need to change. We've become comfortable enough with who we are, with how we think, with our opinions, with the way we feel about things, with the way we talk, and with the way we act. That comfort level is more persuasive to us than the idea that change would somehow improve our lives. We have an emotional attachment to all those things. It's become a familiar bedfellow, and even though we know it's not perfect, we think, who is? And then we get into the comparison game and we go, I may not be perfect, but at least I'm better than. And that can put us in a position of real comfort. The reality is that we have a self-serving flesh that absolutely hates the idea of not getting its own way. Our flesh desperately wants to fight to keep things the way they are because it's helped lead us to where we sit today. But listen to what it says in Galatians 5:17. We naturally love to do evil things that are just the opposite from the things that the Holy Spirit tells us to do. And the good things we want to do when the Spirit has His way with us are just the opposite of our natural desires. These two forces within us are constantly fighting each other to win control over us, and our wishes are never free from their pressures. I want you to hear this. Change is not difficult in your life because of the way you were raised and because your parents are holding you back. Change is not difficult in your life because your spouse won't let you change. Change is not difficult in your life because you don't have enough money or enough time to do it. And change is not happening in your life because you're not hearing the right messages at church. You're not listening to the right podcast. You're not reading the right books. You don't have the right opportunities. Change is not happening in your life because you and I stand in the way of the change that leads us to the best of who we are. Change doesn't happen because we don't think we need to change. Not bad enough to actually do it. And that leads us to our third and final point, which is this. The world instantly becomes a better place when I decide that the single hardest change I'll make is who I trust to change me. Is who I trust to change me. So how many of you admit to having blind spots in your life? Okay, some of you, those who didn't raise your hand, that's one of your blind spots. You don't think you have any blind spots. So how many of you think, of those who are admitting you have blind spots, how many of you think you have a pretty good idea of what most of those are? Okay, so some raising your hand. So here's what's kind of funny about it, is if we're being entirely honest, most of us think we have a pretty good sense of our weaknesses and our shortcomings and our failures. There is a reason, though, they call those blind spots, is because we can't see them. we think we have a pretty, I mean, I know I have weaknesses. And I could, if you sat down and said, what do you think are your, five top things that are weaknesses of yours that you would want to change or you think need changing or maturing or growing or development in your life? And I'd be able to name some of those. But if you really want to know what's wrong with you, you really want to know what you should be working on, ask your spouse, ask your kids, ask your family, your parents, ask your closest friends, ask coworkers, ask those who know you best what are things. Just say, hey, if there was something you thought maybe I didn't see that I could improve, what would that one thing be? Like, tell me something I do well, so you don't walk away completely deflated and want to, go find a tall building. But, what's something I do really well? And then what's something that you think, hey, this is an area of development? And you'd have to have a close enough relationship with them. Most people are too polite to answer that question if they don't know you well. They just go, it's not worth hurting their feeling or having a weirdness. But if you ask somebody that really knew you, I promise you, they would probably give you something. Now, here's where that falls apart. Our natural response is to go, oh, that's rich coming from you, right? Because then you go, I know you didn't ask, but I'd like to share six things you could change starting today. Now, if you want to be lied to, if you want to be told you're good, ask yourself what you need to change. Listen to what it says, a pretty famous passage in Jeremiah 17:9. It says this: the human mind is the most deceitful. Other translations say heart, but we know that the heart's not capable of feelings or thoughts. That's the innermost part of our brain, of our thinking, is what we call our heart. The human mind is the most deceitful of all things. It's incurable. No one can understand how deceitful it really is. The reality is, even if you recognize that your mind lies to you, you don't know the extent your mind lies to you. They say pathological liars are so convincing because they become so familiar with it that there's even a point at which they start believing their own narrative. And so they can so naturally lie that you go, I never detected that. I'm a pretty good, Lisa will tell you, I can almost, upon meeting someone, assess whether, and it's not that I can always determine what exactly is wrong, but I always know when something's off. I always know when I can't trust that. But just, they say that that those with ADHD have pattern recognition, so you can see things over and over in the way people behave, the way people act, they give off signals, and so you become a predictor of behavior. And then there are those who really just surprise me. And I just think, wow, how did I miss that? And the truth is, we miss it because we have become so comfortable, all of us have, with even lying to ourselves about the change that needs to happen in us. Listen to what it says. David prayed this prayer, aware of his own deceitful heart, prayed this to God in Psalm 19:12. Nobody realizes every time they do something wrong. Nobody realizes all of the things they're doing wrong. So please forgive me for the sins I don't know about. I love that. I love that David was self-aware enough to know how unaware of himself he was. He had just enough self-awareness to say, I don't even know all the times I'm sinning, all the things I'm doing to offend others and hurt other people and hurt you, God. Do you know that the sins against people are sins against God? If you look at the law through the Old Testament, the sins that God called out were sins against each other. It was if you kill somebody's farm animal, you need to make amends or God will hold you accountable. If you accidentally kill someone in a fight, then you need to make amends. God said the offenses that we have towards each other are offenses to his very image because he created all of us. And he says, when you offend the creation of God, you offend God himself. David said, I don't even know my capacity to do wrong. So forgive me even for all the things I don't know. And that sounds hopeless. Because if you and I can't trust really others, because let's be honest, others are skewed and biased and have subjective opinions about us. They're probably right about a lot of things, but they might be coming with their own issues that shape their answers. And we definitely can't trust ourselves because we're self-preservers, we're self-protectors. None of us want to admit how much could possibly be wrong with us. So it's not that we can't change because we'll never get the right answers from others. And it's not that we can't change because we can't get the right answers from ourselves. So there's no possible way we could know all that needs to change. The question really is, how can I change by asking the question, who can I trust about what needs to change in me? In Ezekiel 36:26, this is what God says, "And I will give you a new heart, and I will pour into you, another translation says, a new spirit. And I will take out your stony, stubborn heart and give you a tender, responsive heart." I love that. I love that God says, you are rebellious, you're hard-hearted, you resist change, you resist me. But if you come with humility and you put yourself before me and you trust me, I will put into you, David said, create in me a clean heart and renew a right spirit within me. And God says, I'll do that. He says to his people, he says through his prophets, and he says to us today, listen, I know the position of your heart, and I know all the things that you do wrong. And I'm not comparing you to anyone else. I'm only looking at who I created you to be and who you are today. And I know that the change that comes to your life only makes you more of who you were created to be. And I promise you, that's a good, good thing. We're going to talk in the future about learning to hate some things in order to love some things. But at the end of it, you have to really hate the idea of not changing. Hate it so much that it overcomes the fear and the resistance and the reluctance of change. The fear and the resistance and the uncertainty and the risk of the unknown. There was a time, it's probably 20 years now, that I had to recognize some things were really broken in my life. And it was tough because I was afraid to find out how much was broken. And I was kind of afraid to find out how it got broken. I was really fearful of the idea that maybe the brokenness had nothing to do with anyone else and maybe it was just me, that I was just a piece of work. And there was nobody to blame for my issues except for me. I almost wanted to find out that someone else, I could put that on them. And I went through a season where it was so overwhelming. The comparison I gave was, it feels like I'm on my back and the mountain is laying on my chest and just my head is out from underneath the mountain so that I can be properly discouraged. So that I can look up from that perspective and not even see the top of the mountain that I have to climb. And I felt paralyzed. I didn't even want to try. Fortunately, I was told I needed to go get some help or it was going to jeopardize my position. And so I was sort of forced into a position where I wanted to do what I needed to do to keep my position. And the more I went, I want you to hear this. I so desperately hated it all in the beginning. It was so brutally hard. Because I told Lisa this, and hopefully you'll excuse my vernacular I said, before, I'll clean it up. Before I was a rear end, and just you all knew about it. Now, it's that I'm a rear end, and I also know about it. I liked it better when I was unaware. Because now I know about me what all of you have already known. And that was humiliating to know that everyone saw this in me but myself. I remember being young and finding out that, I think all the kids are gone, that a certain Christmas character wasn't real. And I was embarrassed because my whole family knew and I didn't. And I felt like a joke was being played on me. And that was just, you know, a little kid being embarrassed that he was still acting like a little kid. And I went through that same thing with, oh, this is bad. I don't know which is worse, continuing on and not knowing or continuing on with knowing and having to face all the people who know this about me. But I will tell you this, the longer I stayed in the process, the more I fell in love with the changes that were happening in my life. And I got to the end of that process at that season in my life. And I want to tell you, it's why I became a true believer and a lover of counseling. If there's something sideways in my life, I don't hesitate. I don't resist. I don't squawk at the idea of going to counseling. It's wonderful having someone with an outside perspective, with no axe to grind, no dog in the fight, who will just help me work through me issues. And there are times when they'll say, hey, so this person clearly affected you and triggered you in some, but they're not responsible for how you're acting. You're responsible for how you're acting. They started something that made you begin to respond this way, but you're 100% responsible for your response. And that was liberating to know that I could acknowledge that, hey, someone did something and that was a meaningful something, but wow, did it squeeze the toothpaste tube and something other than toothpaste came out of me, and that's that I need to work on. So I want you to hear this. I don't want you to feel bad and walk away going, well, that was really discouraging. Like, I'm about to find out what a rear end I am, and that doesn't sound good at all. No, not at all. Especially when I'm reading a book right now, and one of the characters is an AA, and they all just come into a room, and I know some of you have this experience in recovery, and they come into a room, and man, they just lay it out there, and there's something refreshing, and there's safety when you realize you're among others who are experiencing the same kind, not the same story, but the same themes of discouragement and the same themes of struggle. And can I tell you that this is one big AA meeting? Just happens to not necessarily be about addiction to alcohol or drugs, but this is about all of us needing to find places in our life that are holding us back from being who we were created to be. And collectively, but more importantly, more necessarily, individually deciding, I don't care if anyone else joins me on this journey, I want to change. I want to change for me, because listen, my journey led to me becoming a much better husband, a much better father, a much better pastor. But at the end of it all of those are titles and roles that I play, a much better version of me that God created me to be. Have I achieved that just like Paul? I have not reached the end of my journey. I've not finished the race. I've not gotten there yet. But I'll tell you what, it's nice being somewhere in the middle of the mountain instead of having it sitting on your chest. And you can look back. If you look up and you get a little discouraged, you just look back and you go, I did that though. I did that. God threw me the rope, called me, told me where to put my feet, where to put my hand next. God helped me get there. And I want you to know you can get there too. Would you bow your heads and close your eyes? And we're going to finish together with just the ability to respond. A marker on the ground, just a line in the sand, a checkered mark starting point where you said, this is where it begins. It's not a race to the finish. This is a marathon. I'm going to pace myself. I'm going to work toward. Can I tell you that clean heart? God removing that stony, stubborn heart and replacing it with a submissive, humble, responsive heart. Can I tell you that's a transplant that takes time? It's chiseling away at the hardness. It's breaking up the stiffness in our resistance to change and respond to God. Father, I'm going to pray on behalf of every one of us in here. There might even be those who say, I truthfully don't even know that I need to change. And we've all been in a place where it's easier to say that than just say, I would imagine there are maybe a discouraging level, a discouraging number of things that need to change in me, but that would be overwhelming to me, and I just don't think I could handle that. You're too gentle and you're too kind and you're too merciful and you're too graceful to bully us with what needs to be changed about us. We, on the other hand, will do that to ourselves. We'll do that to others. We'll let others do it to us. We love seizing on the weakness of others so that it kind of makes us feel better about ourselves. God, you're simply too good to do that to us. And you're too good for us to not trust you with what needs to change in us. You have no ulterior motives. You're not a manipulator. You're not a bully. You're not insecure. And so the things that you created us to be, you can see everything that holds us back from that. And you say, this is a hurdle that not only can you overcome, you will overcome. You just have to start walking that way. And once you walk that way, you'll start picking up the pace and you'll start running. And once you run, you'll be able to hurdle that. I know you don't feel confident. I know your footsteps are unstable now. Don't worry about that. We're going to train together. Every day I'm going to make you more capable and more capable and more capable. God, let that journey begin today though for us. No more resistance to change. No more denial. No more naivety that we don't need to change. Today begins a journey of trusting you, following you, listening to you, moving towards you, and we'll do it all in Jesus' name. Amen. Amen.